You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. And we are here today with Laura Bruska, who is the Chief Communications Officer at Forbes and also our new president of New York Women in Communications. And we are so excited and honored to have you as a guest today. Thank you so much. Welcome, Laura.
I'm so excited to be on the podcast.
We are also so excited to talk today about you, your career, and what's going to be happening within our organization this year and beyond. So I am going to start, as I always do, with a question we like to ask all of our guests. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing women in the workplace today?
I love this question. I think it gets to the root of a lot of the things that we at New York Wiki are often talking about and a lot of the things that we're trying to solve for. But for me, when I'm thinking about it, there's two words. It's imposter syndrome, right? So I think so often women, especially women, struggle with imposter syndrome and doubting themselves in their own success and ability, which completely holds us back. It's something that, you know, I myself personally have, you know, experienced and struggled with over the years. And I hear it so often, so frequently during, different events that I'm at, you know, and talking to other women. Mika Brzezinski, as you know, from MSNBC, she has the great platform of knowing your value. And it's something that know your value platform where you think about it. I think that more women need to recognize their value, their ability and their expertise, and not second guess themselves when they're taking on something new or different and thinking, do I have the experience to do this? Do I check a box here? Right. So, if you're applying for a new position, you know, if you check the box on 60% of it, but maybe there's 40%, that's a little bit gray. You know, are you going to apply for it? You know, it's something I even talk to a lot of my, you know, friends about as well. And my book, my female and male friends about, you know, in terms of that whole experience in the workplace. And I think it's something that for whatever reason, we are all really looking at and struggling with. But I'd love to know, Julie, too, from your standpoint.
I think imposter syndrome is such a biggie. And I feel like we've been talking about it forever. I mean, my entire career, truly, and especially as it pertains to women, like, I don't hear as much men talking about it, not to say they are not. But, I think as you're speaking, what's running through my head is, what do we do about it, right? Just thinking, oh my God, right. We've been talking about it. We were talking earlier, like we've been doing this podcast for so long now, six, 7 years. And it's like, we're still talking about the same issues. And that's kind of what we try to get to with some of these first initial questions of like, wow, the issues that pop up are the same. And probably at some point we should do some episode, like just going through all the issues people have talked about and bringing people on to dig into those, because they truly are recurring. You know, I mean, imposter syndrome, obviously women making less money in the workplace, issues with work-life balance, or we try to call it just balance now, rather work-life balance, new issues with working remotely and how that, you know, affects women in the workplace. So any thoughts about, you know, what you do even, like when you're, you know, you have a very exciting new job, we'll talk about more in this episode, but like, what are some of the things that you've done in the past to, you know, get around it or survive it?
Well, I think I had a bit of a turning point about, you know, five years ago. I had a boss and a manager, and he said to me, I want you to put this on a post-it and I want you to write, don't ask for permission. And it doesn't mean that, you should always just break the rules and things like that. But there was this idea that sometimes it's okay just to do it and just to go ahead and trust your gut and to believe that you have the answers to move things forward. And that for me was, it's something that I need to rewrite the post-it now that we're all working from home. I had it in my office for so long, but it really was something that encouraged me, and it really reminded me always to trust my gut. And I think that's the thing. It's like, I always try, like if there's something that feels wrong or off or something here, it's like when you trust your gut and you really believe in yourself and you have confidence and people who are also rooting for you and give you confidence through it, like it really helps to overcome those moments of imposter syndrome. But to be honest, it's something that is a recurrent thing. Like there's moments when like you can be on such a high and then something happens and like you're like, oh, wait a minute. And it brings you way back down. And I think it's like remembering in those low points that this is just a low point moment, and that I'm fully able and I'm fully capable. And you know what? We all go through those moments, but not letting it get you down or making you second guess yourself.
Absolutely. And that's a really good point that like it could be every new situation is an opportunity for imposter syndrome, essentially, right? And so and as we're talking, I'm like, you know, why is it so unique? Not unique, but why is it more often that it is a issue for women? Because as we're talking about, this is like a woman's issue, and there's millions of reasons for that that date back probably to the beginning of women having jobs at all and being in the having careers. But I think it really, you know, there's a lot of self-work, which I think is the hard part. You have to really get yourself to a place where you can enter a situation and feel like, why would I be any less qualified than anyone else in this room, you know, depending on the situation. But, and I think that that's the hard part, especially about this, because it's more something you have to do within, and it's not something women really like. Not that we don't talk about it, we do talk about it. But as we're talking here, it's like, what are we doing to work on it? I think it's a lot of confidence building, you know, just networking conversations, understanding your industry. Like there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
I think that's the challenge. You have to, like, we have to do it ourselves. And that's just harder for something for, especially in the workplace.
And I think it's also that, you know, you don't always have to have all the answers. And that's okay. And when you have incredible people around you that you can trust and rely on and who add great perspective from different points of view, it really, it, you know, again, it just, it all the further can just reinforce your ability, but also knowing that like, you don't have to have all the answers, right? Like sometimes it's a work in progress.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, even if you have some of the answers, you still are like qualified to speak on something or to apply for the job or to enter the room. And I think that exactly you've like hit the nail on the head in terms of, I think women especially, we like to be prepared. We like to have all the knowledge before we jump into a situation, but like it is okay not to, and that's going to help you go a long way. I think we solved it. No, just kidding. We didn't solve it, but
all right.
Okay, well, have a great day. I love that piece of advice you gave. I remember when I was at Hearst, Kathy Black, that was one of her big pieces of advice, was to ask for permission later to or not to ask for permission, you know, not to ask for permission,
right? Ask for forgiveness.
Later. Yes, thank you. Ask for forgiveness. So don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness later and to dive in. And I really took that to heart. I was really young in my career when I heard that advice. And I have to say I agree. It's really good advice. Like I can't even remember a situation where it didn't benefit me to do the thing. And if it, you know, if it wasn't perfect or didn't work out, to deal with it later. Like I, you know, and I don't even have a key moment where I like learned a bad lesson from that. So I think it's a really nice piece of career advice. We are constantly talking about those, you know, key issues for women. And I know it's a lot of what we'll be talking about this year in New York Wiki. Before we dive into that a little bit more, I wanted you to share your journey with our audience. So your entire career journey from school to internships beyond, kind of anything that's relevant. I think that one really cool thing to me about your career journey is that you've been at two companies, you have not jumped around a lot, and you know, that's really, it can be rare nowadays. So love to hear about the whole thing. And then when we kind of get to those companies, like how, you know, how staying at those companies really helped you with your career growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I studied communications at Denison University, and I also minored in psychology. And during university, to be honest, I thought I wanted to be in advertising. I always had like passion for creative advertising. And I had this book about Ogilvy and just his history in advertising. And my senior year, I did two internships. One was at a small, I lived in Kansas City at the time, and where my family is from. And one was an advertising internship at a small firm. And then my dad also was like, while I was confirming that I was going to do that, he was like, well, there's another opportunity on at my company. There's a corporate communications department. He worked as the director of energy efficiency for this big Midwest energy company. And I said, sure, like I'll do both. Like I'll do the advertising one on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and I'll do corp comms the other days. And so I would drive all the way from the suburbs downtown and do both. And as I was doing both, I really got into corp comms. It was something that I honestly didn't have like a ton of like, you know, past like knowledge or experience on. But there were so many opportunities. They let me do, you know, internal comms, employee comms, issues management. They really brought me into so many different parts as an intern, and I learned so much. And it was something that I knew I kind of wanted to go into, you know, and I really made a pivot there. When I was also in my senior year, I had applied for a bunch of jobs in New York City. And one of the agencies I applied for was Ruder Finn. There was an executive training program that they have, and it's a 3-month partner, 3-month training program. And so I had applied for it, and I actually found out the week before I graduated that that I had there was a spot open for me that they had accepted me for. And it was a very long process. There were a lot of writing samples they needed and interviews and this and that. It was very like a couple months long. And at the time, this was before cars had built-in GPS. My dad bought me a GPS system to drive east instead of west. And so I headed east. I moved in with my grandma and I commuted, you know, 2 hours each way and until the end of that 3-month period where, you know, at the end, they were like, we want you to stay. So, you know, I worked at Ruder Finn for 6.5 years and I have, you know, I so much love for that agency and just the experience that I got there, you know. Two years in, I was supporting a launch for a pediatric malaria drug called Coartem Dispersible, and I was helping to support the English language launch in Tanzania. We went to hospitals and brought a time photographer, and it was one of those moments in my career that it will always stick with me because it was such a impactful moment to go to hospitals and see a product that you're promoting, an initiative that you're promoting that's doing good in the world and making it easier for young children to take a life-saving medicine. There was a stat that we were always saying, every 30 seconds, a child dies from malaria. And it was such a sad thing. And this medicine really, you know, made such a difference in, you know, getting children to take the medicine. And so, you know, I just got super into it. I was super passionate. I did a lot of work there. And I think the thing that kept me at the agency so long was, you know, just that I always raised my hand for new things. I didn't want to just be, I can only do healthcare PR, or I can only do this type of PR. So whenever there were new business pitches or new opportunities that came along, I would jump on them. I would work till, you know, sometimes I'd be there till 10 or 11 at night and, you know, working on a PowerPoint deck that was due the next day for a new client. But, and it was kind of like one of those years in your 20s where you're really working hard, but, you know, you're working on really great initiatives and great projects. And, you know, I had the opportunity to work with Kering, the company that owns Gucci and Saint Laurent. And when they moved over to the Americas and they had a corporate office over here and H&M on some, of their sustainability work. So it was really great. And then, you know, at 6 years in, I really wanted to make a pivot and go in-house. I had, you know, worked with so many clients and I kind of was like, you know what, I really want to do PR for my own company and just kind of, you know, experience that side of things too. And I've always been a very passionate person when it comes in terms of media and journalism. Media relations has always been an area in particular that I'm passionate about. And so when the opportunity to work at Forbes came along, I jumped at it. I was excited to go over. And actually the funny thing is this week, one of my colleagues told me on Tuesday, she goes, did you know it's your 10-year anniversary? I have, yeah, it was like a moment because I knew it was coming. I knew it was in early January, but these past few weeks have been so busy that like, I forgot which day it was, right? Like the exact day. And she texted me, she's like, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Oh my God. Yeah. That's a huge milestone. Like 10 years at a company. Wow.
A decade. Right. I mean, it's like such a moment because, you know, I started as a senior manager. I started when we had our offices in Fifth Avenue. You know, I've seen us through sale process, through a centennial celebration, you know, our 100th year anniversary, our move to Jersey City. It's been such an amazing ride these past 10 years. And even just seeing these lists that like our under 30 lists and our creators lists, these lists really just come to life like over the years. And the under 30 has just become a phenomenon. Like it's everywhere. Like everyone globally, like, you know, wants to be on the list, and the community is passionate, and it's unlike anything you've ever seen. So it's something that's just been such a exciting ride and experience to be part of. And you know, now stepping into this chief comms role, it's really you know, again, just something I'm so excited for. And I think that it kind of is a proof point that, you know, hard work and patience and, you know, and just continuing to do really good work can really pay off.
No, it's amazing. And like I said, it's such a great story because, I mean, it's always been kind of the what people say, especially in our industry, is like, oh, if you want to get more money or a bigger title or a bigger job, like you have to jump, you have to jump. And like, I always kind of felt like it was sad because I would see a lot of people who loved their jobs, right? And then would leave just to kind of seek something else. And sometimes, of course, it's like, it is impossible to grow at a company. I mean, there are those truths.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's always, like, I don't think it's always a situation. I mean, I don't, I want to acknowledge that it could be completely out of your control and then it makes
100%.
Sense.
100%. So I think part of it is that it's the culture of the company that you're working for too, and just the people that you're around and the leadership teams that are running it. And I think that I really have lucked out in both respects, and the culture that I've worked, you know, in, and also the companies I've worked in, they've both been fairly, I would say, not huge companies, right? So, you know, when you think of Forbes, like we're a huge, massive global brand, but are, you know, we're fairly tight and small family, and the way we work together is pretty unique. And I think it's something that makes us special as well. You know, again, just being a 100-year-old brand that was, you know, founded by, you know, BC Forbes, and, you know, and being where we are today.
So we've mentioned that you were promoted to Chief Communication Officer at Forbes. Congratulations. I would love to dive into that a little bit more. I mean, we talked about your journey specifically with this promotion. You know, how did you achieve it? What were some of the things you did, goals you set for yourself to get there? And, you know, what advice do you have for other women who are shooting for that promotion within their own company?
So, like, as I mentioned, you know, being here for 10 years is such a milestone moment. And when I joined, you know, again, I think I came in with that same mentality that I had at the agency, which is always raise your hand for new opportunities and try to use every opportunity to learn from your leadership team. And so it was something that continued to be part of my my drive at Forbes, is really getting to know the business across the business and work on every end of it. So internal comms, issues management, the different components there. And I think it's becoming the thing that helps you, you know, really continue to move forward and get ahead, is becoming a great asset and a trusted advisor, both for, you know, your manager, but also for other leaders across the organization. You know, I think over the years, I have great trust with certain team members, and they've had great trust with me. And I think it's really helped me to just, again, continue to step forward.
Fabulous. It's such an exciting time, and it's such a big role. We're so, so excited for you. And you have taken on another huge role this year, which is president of New York Wiki. And I mean, you got some stuff going on, just a little bit going on.
Yeah.
Before we were recording, we were saying it basically happened like kind of all at once. So hopefully you've settled in a little bit. But we definitely want to take time today to talk about the year ahead in New York Wiki. Just starting with, you know, the role of the president, not just what it is, but what do you see this year your role being as president of New York Wiki?
Well, I mean, it's a huge, huge honor to be in this role of New York Wiki. I've been on the board since 2019. And I joined pre-pandemic, you know, I joined on the student affairs committee. So just I'll go back a little bit on my history just with New York Wiki, because I think it also paints the picture of my future too. But I started off with the student affairs committee because I've always been very passionate about giving back to younger women who are in their career and trying to navigate their career experiences. I was fortunate even in college when I called up my alumni, for example, and they would pick up the phone and speak with me and tell me about their careers. And it always has really helped helped me as a person too, when someone takes, you know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes out of their day to talk to me about something and to share their career journeys. It really can have an impact so much on a younger woman. And so I wanted to be more involved with the student affairs work so that I could, you know, again, continue that, that part of like what I'm passionate about and give back. So we did the student boot camp, which was very, very exciting that year. It was a very huge success. And then obviously in 2020, things kind of took a change and they had asked me to take on a different role in New York Wiki. They said, hey, Laura, like we really need you in comms. Can you join us and be VP of comms? And I said, yes, of course, whatever you need. So, and that was a period where we were really shifting to digital virtual and really making a lot of changes as an organization. It was, you know, also a lot of uncertainty during that time. You know, everybody was trying to navigate so many challenges at once, and there were a lot of unknowns. And so, you know, for us at New York Wiki, we were, you know, trying to help others navigate it and navigate the challenges ourselves. And, you know, over the years, you know, I've served as chief strategy officer and most recently, president-elect. I think the thing that I love the most about our organization is really just the women, the network of other women who are always there to support one another. It is something, you know, Mandy, you know, Carr, who's a producer on the show and, you know, someone, you know, who helps you, Julie, and, you know, so many people that I see connected to the New York Wiki brand over the years and just continue to stay connected. And it's something I love because it's, you know, we cross paths in different ways in different moments, but we're always there for one another. And there's a true feeling of that, I think, when you are part of our organization. And so what you said about the year ahead is I'm very excited. I think that, you know, under the leadership of the past few presidents, Dusty and Georgia, we've really set an incredible foundation for our organization. We are, we have some exciting things to come. So we are, as you know, we are moving Matrix up to the spring. Matrix had historically always happened in the springtime. And so we were, you know, we had to push it back a little bit with timing and during the pandemic, but we've moved it back and we are really excited for it. So, you know, please be sure to save the date for May 21st at the Ziegfeld. But, you know, ahead too, just looking at what's ahead, we are, there's a lot of programming that's in the works. Our programming team has just already hit the ground running on some very exciting things that we're going to be announcing soon. And I think, you know, again, the scholarship program too, which is really part, a really key pillar and heart for New York Wiki. You know, our scholarship program is accepting applications right now. And it's really become something over the years that we've become known for. But it again goes back to what I said at the beginning, is all about giving back to the younger generation and helping them as well. And I think whether it's financially or giving your time, there's such an importance to do that. And I'm something I'm very proud of as an organization that we continue to do.
It's great. I'm so looking forward to this year. I know the mentorship program is back. So that is definitely related to that key goal of giving back and also just connecting all the women. We're very excited. And when you, you know, when you come in as a president of New York Wiki, do you put in place is like a certain key goal for the year? Is that something that and you know, that you do, and then that is executed upon, or there's multiple kind of goals?
Yeah, I kind of had what was my a couple key goals. So one of them was it was kind of what I called the three R's or so, which is not, and I said this during the annual meeting, not reuse, you know, recycle kind of message, but more of a you know, reinforce what we stand for message is the first. Second, we're really looking to continue to engage with our members and re-engage with our members in new ways. And then the third is like really focused on ROI. So we're looking on priorities. You know, we really have to prioritize things as an organization, and so that we can really get some of those big initiatives, like our great program that we did with Comms Week last year in the fall with Linda Boff, as well as our annual meeting, which has such a great session with Joanna Coles and Judith Harrison, and led by Georgia. So again, we're looking at big programming components like that, and finding ways to prioritize those in the year ahead.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited. I do feel like we're getting there as a society, like back out there.
Yeah.
So this timing is great in terms of, I do feel like people are just more than ever wanting to network, meet, have opportunities, learn. So I'm very excited for this year and everything that is to come, because I think that the membership was going to be seeking out a lot, and you guys are going to be providing a lot of networking, I mean, a lot of programming and networking opportunities. So I'm excited for this year.
I'm so excited for the year too. Yeah. You know, and the other thing I'll say too is, and I wrote this in my New Year's note, but I think that the year ahead is going to be a really pivotal year, and for a lot of reasons. You know, the upcoming US presidential election, the continued focus on AI and people embracing new technologies and Gen AI. We're going to continue to see a lot of disruption around both of those things in particular. And I think that, you know, being with New York Wiki and being communicators, part of our opportunity is to help our industry, and by sharing and by being there for one another during this, as we all navigate these challenges.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect transition to our AI question. We've been talking about AI on this podcast. I think our industry, I mean, everything in the world, right, is impacted. Our industry particularly, there's so much conversation about what's going to happen, what's going to happen to jobs, is it going to help us, is it going to hurt us? So we've really tried to embrace that conversation and talk to our guests about it and bring in all different experts. So I wanted to ask you today, in terms of AI, you know, are you using it in your job or even in your personal life, and how are you using it? I also want to talk about, where do you see AI going in terms of the future of communications? You know, how do you think it's going to change the industry, or maybe not? I mean, there's a lot of conversation about certain things that are going to happen that some people are like, let's not worry about that yet. So wanted to get your thoughts, because as you said, it's just going to impact everything we do in the future.
Personally, I'm not like using it on a day-to-day basis. I signed up for ChatGPT. I've experimented with it, and I've seen obviously the great opportunity and how smart it is, and it's continuing to learn, right? So that's the thing that like is so fascinating, is like the continued you know, learning that is part of that. But as an organization, at Forbes, you know, earlier, or actually a few months ago, we just launched a new search product called Adelaide, which is a Gen AI search tool that has underlying technology by Google. And it's a way to help improve the search process. It's in beta launch right now, so it's kind of like early days. And, you know, but it's something that I think a lot of people, you know, we're going to continue to see organizations like Forbes and others, you know, experiment with these technologies as tools, you know, in particular for enhancing content, you know, for enhancing search, for things like that. It'll never replace journalism. It'll never, you know, replace certain things. But I think that as a tool, you know, as you can use it in a Zoom meeting, for example, to capture notes or things like that, it'll be really interesting to see how it'll continue to shape both, I think, people's day-to-day and make people's jobs easier, but also just the future of how we do things and how we go. I know Joanna Cole spoke about this quite a bit during our annual meeting, and I loved how bold she was about it. Of course, that's what you would expect from someone like Joanna, but, you know, right.
So, absolutely. Bold is the word. It's awesome.
Yeah. But I love how she said, you know, if you're become the smartest person in the room on this, you know, learn about it. And I think that's something that us in as comms leaders, we all need to do, is start to become smarter on it and understand how it could be useful in certain ways in our jobs, in our industry, to make our jobs easier. And the more we do that, you know, the better off I think we'll be for it, because I don't think it's not going anywhere. It's not that I don't Right. think it's not going anywhere, but I do think there will be some things I think, you know, over the course of the year with, you know, like certain, you know, like how it's been just fascinating to watch, just even just with like different, you know, the legal, things happening, and certainly like, you know, how, lawmakers are thinking about it and things like that. So I'll be very definitely watching the news very closely, as I'm sure all of us will.
I love the word you use, enhance, because I really think if you, especially in our industry, if you think of AI enhancing everything you do versus being like afraid of it, you'll go a long way. Like, it's going to help you. I think what so many of us are trying to figure out is like how to use it, how it really can make our lives easier. I think that's still been the thing that like is a little unclear. And you know, we know we are all using it, like, oh, our Gmail's using AI and all these things. But I think thinking about ways to enhance your life or making your life easier is a really nice way to think about it. And of course, Joanna's totally right. It's like, it's not going anywhere. Be the expert.
Yeah.
Just dive right in, because you know, you might as well.
It's funny. We had a, I had an hour call this morning, even just New York Wiki related, about a new search tool that us as an organization we're in communication with about using and partnering with them on, but it's called Socia, and it's a social sharing tool that is using Gen AI. And they were sharing with us how easy it is and how it's really going to make social sharing such an easier process for us. And it was so cool to see them taking content and then customizing it for certain networks. So I just think it's like, you know, from tools like the social one that I learned about today and others, you know, there's just a lot of different ways that I can see it really enhancing, you know, across our industry, different elements. So.
Absolutely. It's like, how can AI help us not, but I think you're right. You mentioned earlier about, you know, the writing. I think the initial messaging of like AI is going to get rid of writers created. I mean, 100%, 1,000,000,000% agree that it's not, because also Google is going to start not liking AI writing as much. So we're going to need writers no matter what. But I think that narrative was created and then people started to get scared of it. And it's like, so we have a lot to do. I'm excited. I think New York Wiki could really help impact some of that, the way that, well, especially women, but people are thinking about how we're using AI in the communications industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you do it all? So we have talked about your job and the presidency and, you know, volunteering, and you're a mom. And a lot of what we talk about on this show is, and we might even already said on this episode, we don't call it work-life balance anymore. We just say balance, because it's never truly going to be the balance of work and life. It's just like the balance of your sanity at any given time with, you know, it's always going to evolve. Sometimes it's more work. Sometimes it's more life. Sometimes it's something else. How do you approach it all? I mean, any advice you can share? So I like to hear from people, even, you know, how you look at your calendar, how you approach your day, how you prioritize. How do you at least attempt to balance everything that you're working on? Because you truly have a lot going on.
It's a really good question. And it's definitely, I think it's another thing that, you know, I'm sure that that challenge question that you asked at the very beginning is something that all women kind of speak to. Just myself, I'm, you know, I had a baby in March of last year, my second son, Max, and he's 9 months now. And then my first is turning thank you. And my first is turning three at the end of this month. You know, and it is truly, a balance, because, you know, being a mom is always going to be a priority and a first thing for me. And it's really changed my life in such a beautiful way. But there is a lot of balance that goes into it, especially, you know, with, having an important leadership role, at the helm of, you know, Forbes and overseeing comms, and then also the New York Wiki presidency. So for me, what helps me get through, and I know this is such a simple thing, is like really just constantly thinking about what are my top priorities and to-dos, and what is like urgent and like what is something that can wait, and kind of keeping those things in mind, and then trying to find pockets of time for myself in the meantime, which is very difficult these days. But even just on MLK Day, I was saying to a friend earlier that I'm very excited that the daycare is still open, but my office is closed, because there's very rare days like that. And so, you know, my husband and I are going to have lunch out together and just enjoy a day to ourselves. But I think it's finding moments and pockets of time, and understanding that when things feel crazy and chaotic and busy, that like there's going to be moments that are going to be like that. And that's just the reality of life. But that to breathe and to remember that like there are going to be pockets of time too, when you can sit and reflect and have a moment to yourself, it's always kind of like an important thing to come back to.
So important. I know someone who calls those golden days, the days that the daycares are open, but the businesses are closed.
Yeah, they're few and far between.
There's very few. They almost never happen, but those are the golden days. But it's true. I mean, it's really great to hear you talk about that. I think that's something I don't hear said a lot, of just like making sure you take time for yourself, and even just pauses. It really is like the way to keep sanity. Are there certain things, are there certain things at work or in life that feel particularly stressful to tackle that you've had to work on? Like for me, I'm like overwhelmed always by email, and I feel like I've had to create lots of systems and things like that. Is there anything for you that you feel like you have really lately have been like, okay, I got to work on it, or, you know, something in the past that you feel like you've really just handled? You got it. You figured it out.
My newest challenge is meetings. It's especially taking on, you know, this new role. There's been an influx of meetings. And so I need pockets and hours of time when I can really spend time writing or focusing on something very high level. And so what I've been doing is putting holds on my calendar for moments when I don't want anything booked on my calendar, because Yeah. And remembering that like something I might've booked a few weeks ago might not be what I need in this moment right now. I think that's always, and it doesn't mean that, and I hate canceling on people, but like sometimes you have to look at the week ahead and say, you know what, like this made a lot of sense when I had nothing going on, but now this week is a completely different thing and beast, and I need to refocus and reprioritize this. So, you know, we need to find different times to make this work, or this here, and it all kind of comes together in the end, but right now it's my calendar.
I understand. I think the blocks is a great advice. And actually, it's so funny, because that's something that has been new to me, what you just said of like, it's almost like constantly reprioritizing, which is not maybe the best way to put it, but like I've had that happen even just like in the past few days a lot. My God, I had this meeting. I had a meeting earlier today, and I was like, I have a deadline. The deadline has to come before this meeting, and I need to remind myself that like this is not urgent. This can happen at any time. It's hard. It's really, really hard. All of that is the balance. But I think that's something I had to learn, and I'm happy that you mentioned it.
And also, and I think for me too, you know, I'm starting to say, you know, I can't join every meeting. And so, you know, it's important to have a team that surrounds you. And thankfully, we always call our team small and mighty at Forbes, especially is like our small and mighty team that we can divide and conquer. And I'm thankful for all of them that they can join certain calls and lead certain calls, and then, you know, update, and we all come together and make decisions. But it's helpful that, you know, the trust in the team that you work with is so important.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. And to actually trust the team and to just step back. That's the hardest part.
And it gives them opportunity too, you know, so they, I think it's a win-win.
Absolutely. Well, I knew we would have so, so, so much to chat about. I don't want to end the conversation without talking a little bit more about career advice. This, at the heart of it, this is a career advice podcast. And I'd love for you to share your favorite piece of career advice, or a really good piece of career advice that you have received. Or also, if you have a really terrible piece of career advice that you've received that you want to say, don't follow this. I'd love for you to share that with us before we go.
I mean, I think it goes, and this is, I kind of answered this one already a little bit. Don't ask for permission has always been that point of golden advice that I've always really looked and followed. But yeah, so I mean, not to answer it again, but I think it's, for me, it's learning to step outside a little bit and keep things going and taking the lead.
Before we wrap up, I would love for you to share what you've been listening to or reading or watching that you're just loving right now, whether it's helping you with your career or just like keeping you sane. We always love our guests to share something like that.
Well, on a professional level, I think it's a lot of the newsletters that are coming through, and they keep me kind of centered on other things that are happening in our industry, which helps. It helps to keep things in perspective, right? So, for me, I love the Axios newsletter, of course, and the Reagan ones. One of the things I'm actually implementing as chief comms officer, it was funny, I was just talking to a colleague about this yesterday, is doing our own little PR industry news, like, knowledge sharing newsletter for our team. So, a story or two a week where, it's how someone handled a crisis in a really unique way, or handled something really, in a smart or fun, creative way, so that our team can continue to learn. Because I feel like sometimes when you look at what's happening around the industry and take a step back and you say, oh, well, that's really interesting here, and that's really interesting here, like the whole story, even just about the Alaska Airlines situation, and just watching that unfold, and thinking about that from a PR comms perspective and what they must be dealing with. It's something that, I've been kind of like looking at as well. But I think it's always helpful when you can kind of look at those things. I'm not reading a book right now, but Sally Sussman's book is on my next to read list, and it's something that I'm really looking forward to reading, is more books by other women in our industry this year, who are really masters of our field. And then, for me, on a personal level, like when I get my time at the very end of the night, it's something that is, just watching a little bit of Netflix, a little bit of something that is completely unrelated to anything that I do, so I can just enjoy a moment.
Shut your brain off. That's what I say. I say at the end of the
Yes.
day, I have to shut my brain off. I have to shut my brain off.
Like The
I totally
Crown. I've
agree.
been watching The Crown, and like, I just finished it. It was so good. Oh, so good. And just watching shows like that that are really just interesting, and really kind of look back at history a little bit. Obviously, there's not the full truth of history perhaps in that, but it's something that you can kind of take a moment, and it takes you out of your real life for a little moment.
Everyone needs it. I know. I'm like, never feel, no one should ever feel anything but wonderful sitting down and watching something truly mind-numbing at the end of the day. I think it helps.
It
Well, this has been so fun. Thank you for taking the time. It's always so great to see you. And I'm just so excited for your job and for you to be coming in as New York Wiki president. This is going to be an incredible year. And I know there's so much to look forward to. So congratulations and thank you. And we know we'll be hearing from you throughout the year.
Thank you so much again. This was such a fun conversation, and really love the podcast. So thank you.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast: Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.